This shiur is dedicated by Paul and Nina Friedman. Mrs. Friedman is here, and she dedicates this shiur in honor of her son, Rabbi Binyamin Friedman, who walked out of Sbarro's well. He was there at the time of the pigua, and shevach v'hodoy l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he emerged unscathed and unharmed. Yehi Ratzon that should be to all of Klal Yisrael. Let me tell you in advance. The shiur is dedicated to a number of selections from a sefer that I have found extremely inspiring. The sefer is called Orot HaTshuva, the Lights of Tshuva, the Lights of Repentance. It's a small sefer. That's the sum total of the sefer. I even have it in another edition, which is much smaller. It's a small sefer. It's something that was written by Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik L'Berachah. It was written over a period of years, and they're paragraphs. And all of the paragraphs put together, and they all deal with the idea of tshuva. So I have to tell you, number one, I'm very inspired. It took years until one gets into the kind of language that he uses, because he does not write prose. His prose is poetry. It may take a little bit of an effort to understand what he's saying, but guaranteed, it is well worth the effort. I could have chosen many different selections, but there was some that just struck me this year as I went through it. That's what I do when I'm on vacation. So I have my little Orot HaTshuva with me. And by the way, most of his svarim were called Orot one thing or another, Orot HaTchiyah, the light of renewal, Orot HaTorah, the right light of Torah. The yeshivot that are called Orot are named for Rav Kook. All right. The only difficulty that I'm going to have over here is deciding which one to start with, but I'm going to start with one that struck me so deeply this year that there is prophecy, something akin to prophecy in his words. And there may be even more than prophecy, there may very well be a sense of consolation. There may be a light of hope that shines through his words. And that's number 11. Number 10, second side of the sheet. It's a long piece. I will explain. Just have the patience and let's sit back and study it. What he's going to talk about is that there are certain great ideas, majestic thoughts that come down upon this world, and somewhere along the line, in the course of their being brought to fruition, as they move from idea, thought, great plan, holy idea, it reaches somewhere down the line a point at which, in a sense, it begins to seem as though it's just falling apart. The great idea is crumbling. It seems that it is being attacked from all sides. And the great idea seems to be in grave danger of simply disintegrating completely. Why does this happen to great ideas? Why does this happen to great plans? And does it really mean that it simply will, yes, indeed, disintegrate and disappear, and it will all go back to dust? I'll leave it to your imagination at this point what kind of great idea he might be talking about. But I think toward the end of this paragraph, he's going to be quite clear about it. So let's sit back. We're going to read, and I'm going to translate. And I'm going to explain. Yud bet, yesh shemachshava yoredet mimeromei gedulata umimekor taharata. It happens that a thought goes down from the heights of its greatness and from the source of its purity. It goes down. It begins to descend. It's not the same great idea anymore. It doesn't seem to inspire. It seems that it is under attack from all sides. So he says, Mipnei she'acharei asher nidgashma b'maaseh u'b'chayim. Every great thought has to be translated into action. You have to take the thought, you have to take the great plan, and it has to become part of the physical world. People have to take the thought and bring it to fruition. Mifnei she'acharei asher nidgashma, after it has become physical, b'maaseh, through deeds, u'b'chayim, and in life, it's now real. It's no longer an idea. It's no longer a thought. It's real. It exists. It's alive. It's vibrant. It's growing. Well, then why does it go down? Why does it begin to go through a process of descent? So he says, because after it had become affected indeed, And people have, what happened was that Tiplu Bo Anoshim She'enom Hagunim. You know who dealt with it? You know who became involved with this great idea? People who are improper and should not be involved with it. Ve'heheshichu et yif'ata. They have darkened its majesty and beauty. Great idea. Great idea. But then it falls into hands of people who are unworthy of affecting this great idea. They darken it. Hayedida hazot. So he tells us one thing you should know for sure. Hayedida hazot einana yerida olam. The descent is not forever. It's only going to be for a brief period of time. Ki e efsha, it is impossible. Shahatov haruchani hamachshavi yehafet lara. It's impossible for the spiritual good thought to turn bad and sour. It can't happen. That can't be. Can't be. The great, beautiful, majestic thought that's good cannot turn bad. Ki in yiridat sha'a, it is a descent, it goes down just for a period of time, it's temporary. Vihigam came, and maybe the most magnificent thing is what he says now. Vihigam came, that descent is letzorech aliyah. What will happen afterwards is going to be a great ascent and a rebirth of that idea. Utam ha'anashim, because the people who are dealing with the great idea that has now become reality are people shehem ketanim be'echut. They're in quality, they're small people. Yesh lehem godel kamuti, they may have great quantity. In quantity they may be strong, but they're really small people, not the kind of people that should be dealing with this beautiful, beautiful thought. V'gam midazu, afal pi shehi nechshevet kelo legabe ha'echud, even though great numbers, quantity, is really nothing in comparison to quality. It means that if there are other people of great quality, they should be the ones that are affecting the greatness of the idea. The only thing is, when you take a quantity of people who are unqualified, they create a sense of strength of their own. And he says, "Mikomakom kishim itstarefet im haichut, Himatarta uberob om hadrat melech, when this mass of people joins with some people of quality, and then berob om, you have a lot of people, that's the beauty of the king. V'lav davka hakamut hamisparit, ki im gam hakamut hakochanit hametz v'achefetz lirdof ulhasid. Sometimes it's the numbers, and not only the numbers, the quality in numbers, also the numbers or the quantity of strength and effort and will. Sometimes you have a large number of people with great will who can impose their standards on the great idea and cause it to descend. L'chonen et ha-mevukash al-yedei drachim ma'asiyim v'hidgalut ha-koach, who want to establish that which they seek through action and by revealing their strength. Kozeh, now if there are certain phrases you don't understand, you will soon get the entire picture as we take all the pieces in the puzzle and put them together. You'll have a complete picture. He says, "Kol zeh mitgale yoter eitzel anashim balei chomer chazak v'gas v'chasrei ruach atzili." All of this becomes revealed even more by people who are very physical, very coarse, lacking in a spirit of atzilut, of greatness. They just don't have it. They just don't have it. Hamatish al piro v'takoach bihusol hachomer. It weakens the many because of the fact that they are so material. The heaviness, the weight of the material is that which overwhelms them. Kasher hamachshavat zlicha liknot la basis chomri. Now, here he's really summing up everything he says. It says, when any great idea has to materialize, it has to be taken from pure idea into material, into something physical, it of necessity has to descend. It's not the same thing anymore. Kasher hamachshavat zlicha liknot la basis chomri, when a thought has to acquire a physical, a material base, it goes down from its great peak. In the process of its becoming real in the physical world, in the process of it becoming firmly entrenched in the physical world, what happens is at that period of time it is cast down upon the ground. Uparitzim bo'uba, evil people come in. Umechalalim et kedushata, and they defile her sanctity. They defile the sanctity of the great idea. Avul imze, despite that, despite the descent, despite the fact that things are going down. Mitrabim uchluseha, the population grows, the hidgalut ha'omets hachomdi holeket v'nosefet, and the revelation of physical might grows. Hadvorim holchin kach ad bo hator. Now that means that what he's really set up for us is when great idea now has to become translated into action, into the real physical world, then there is grave danger that it is going to descend from the heights of its beauty and its majesty. And then there are going to be people who are unworthy of dealing with this great idea, and they are going to defile its sanctity. Is it always going to be that way? He already told us no, that any descent of the great idea is something that is only temporary. Because any great idea, spiritual idea that is good, must of necessity continue to exist. And then he says, that's how things continue at Bo Hator until it comes the turn of others. Shemit Orim Adinei Lev, when there will be aroused and awakened people of delicate hearts. By delicate hearts, it means people with a sense of sanctity and beauty. Chamushim b'koach tzidkat Hashem, who are going to be armed with not the physical might that he was talking about up until now, but those that are going to be armed with the might of the righteousness of God. V'heim olim al rosh ha-pisgah, they are going to reach, they're going to go up to the heights, shel mekor taharat ha-machshava, to the source of the purity of this great thought. U'mit'amkim b'tochim tam, and they are going to delve into its very depths. And you know what they're going to do with this great idea that had been lying there, defiled? Machnisim bo et ha-toar shebenishmatam. They infuse it with the purity of their own souls. Et kavanoteim ha-adinot u-machshivoteim ha-zakot. Their intention, which is so delicate, so able, so fine, and their thoughts that are pure. They are going to impose their beauty upon this great idea. And as a result of this, this general thought, because of her spiritual pain. And where does the spiritual pain come to this idea? Because there are all sorts of thorns and thistles that stick into her from all sides. He will tell it. You know what happens with the great idea? Because of all of its suffering, he will tell it. Ayefa, she lies there exhausted, b'chushat koach, weakened of all strength, bitar demat mavet, in a sleep that seems to be death, ukimat be'ein ruach chayim, and it reaches the point as though there is no living soul breathing in the idea of it at all. And at that moment, mit oredeti, she awakens, umatchelet lahashpiyan, she begins to influence al kol hanigoshim eileh, anybody who comes toward her with tal chayim, the dew of life, behold, with beauty, gevura mipnimiyuta, and might and strength that comes from her, v'ozmit alim bi'iluyo kol hadbeikim ba, all of those who cling to the great idea that has now become part of the physical world are going to be raised and uplifted together with her. V'gam otam asher dofku bo bimei onyo haruchani, also those who clung to her during the days of her spiritual poverty. She had been emptied of her real meaning. Asher ayedei zodon b'shovavut resha soru mehaderech hareshit, because of evil and rishut, they had turned away from the original road. Haslulol megamata shalom achsana, there was a road that had been paved for this great thought, but there are those who left that road, who left it empty of all of its holiness. Hinei gam heim mitalim ima, even those who defiled her are also going to be raised and uplifted when the new spirit of purity and sanctity is going to be infused in her by those who are going to take over and bring the great idea to its fruition. They too will rise with her. Shovim ayodo, through the great idea, they're going to return b'tshuva b'hiro ve'elyona. The tshuva that is going to come as a result of this great idea is going to be clear and uplifted b'me'uf nesher, like the flight of an eagle. B'kalut nifla, all of a sudden that tshuva is going to be a one with wondrous ease they are all going to rise. She'en domelo, there is nothing like it. Bechol dilui shel chazyon tshuva, that tshuva that's going to come as a result of this, the new life that is being infused into the great idea is going to be a vision greater than any vision of tshuva habo mitzad hit orudot hakoach hatov shel eizeh nefesh pratit. No, there's a feeling of goodness that overwhelms each individual. There are moments at which, you know, we feel that we want to be good, and as a result we do tshuva for those things that we've done that are wrong. But the power of this communal tshuva that is going to occur as a result of this great idea that is now going to be infused with a sense of sanctity and purity and holiness. Different. Different completely in kind than any other kind of tshuva. Hamachazeh hazeh, this vision, bo yavo, it's going to come, v'lo yaacher, it will not tarry. Or Hashem, the light of God, hamu'ulaf, that is concealed ba'ar pilim, within the clouds. And here he begins to tell us what he's talking about. Finally, the light of God that is concealed within the clouds, ha'ganuz b'nekudat tzion ha'yesodit yofia. In that point called Tzion, Yerushalayim, there is great holiness, and that's going to begin to appear, and it's going to impact on all, and there will be a general raising of the level of the spirituality of the Jewish people. And here you can see how he is quoting Lechadodi. Yale mi emek havocha, will raise and uplift from the valley of tears at Migdash Melech, the sanctity of the king, Ir Melucha, the city of the kingdom, v'chol agapeha, and all that surround her. V'imo yalu, with her will rise kol hamachazikim b'knaf mila, all of those who hold on to her coattails. Anybody who's part of Tzion is going to rise. You know, sometimes I think of coattails, I think of coattail, you understand? Anybody who holds on to Tzion is going to rise with Tzion. Those who are close and those who are far, l'tchiyat emet, true rebirth, the Yeshuat Olamim, and eternal salvation. When I went over this the first few times, you could have rung me out. How did he know? This is not prophetic. He's not talking about a great idea that inspired generations of Jews. And then when it finally has to become part of the physical world, there comes a point where people who are not infused with the greatness and the holiness of this idea take hold of it, and it falls, it's weakened, it seems that it's left fatigued and exhausted, it looks as though it is falling into a sleep unto death. There is no living spirit in it. Says, no, that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. Because there will be the great infusion of spirituality that is going to raise everybody who has any connection with Zion. How does he know it? First of all, I believe that there's Ruach HaKodesh. Pashat the man had Ruach HaKodesh. He predicted. I mean, let's say the following. There are always those on the religious right who always accuse Rav Kook of being a starry-eyed person with great love of Israel, and he couldn't see what was taking place around him. What a terrible mistake. He saw with absolute clarity what others were incapable of seeing. But how did he know How does he know that we're going to pull out of the tailspin in which we find ourselves? How does he know it? I believe that the reason that he knows it is because the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says, Kol HaNaviim Kulam, all of the prophets commanded Jews to do tshuva. Ve'en Yisrael Ligolin, and Israel are redeemed only through tshuva. U'kvar hiftiha Torah, the Rambam says, Torah has already guaranteed she'sof Yisrael laso tshuva b'sof galutam. The end is that Israel will do tshuva at the end of their exile, umiyad hein nigolin, and immediately they will be redeemed. Rav Kook says, bo yavo, it's going to come, lo ya'acher, it's not going to tarry. In a sense, what it means, that the worse it gets, the closer we get to it getting a great deal better. And he says the vision, or the phenomenon of that tshuva. And here I believe he also echoes the words of Rav Meir Simcha. Next week's class, we're going to delve into Rav Meir Simcha, the Meshech Chochma, the Or Sameach. And this is an idea that's shared by both Rav Kook and Rav Meir Simcha, that the return to Eretz Yisrael equals a return to one's roots and to one's nation, which ultimately is going to mean a return to Yahadut, to Yiddishkeit. We're impatient. It's taking a little long, and we're paying a heavy price day by day. But it's good to know that there was somebody who foresaw it, and in a sense, he may be placing the blame on those of us from within who had emptied the great idea of its purity and its holiness, or certainly have diminished, so to speak, diminished the holiness and the sanctity of the great idea. But he says that that's natural in the world. Any great idea, as it moves through the process of becoming translated into action, must of necessity go through a process of yirida. It goes down. But that yirida is going to be l'tzorech aliyah. And the great aliyah is going to be that all of those, whether they like it or not, are going to be swept away by the great phenomenon of a tshuva unparalleled in all of history. I can't wait. Okay. I thank you for listening to me. I just had to say this because I was so deeply, deeply moved, and I'm sure that I will read it over and over again, and I will find even more meaning. But here are amazing words. Now, they say about Rav Kook that he never erased. He would write something, it would just flow from his pen. How you write something like this without erasing? I was trying to write a letter an hour ago, and gosh, I'm going to have to erase a lot. But he was able to write long, powerful ideas that really, it's Ruach HaKodesh, it's Ruach HaKodesh. And somewhere I have this feeling, bo yavo v'lo yacher. All right. Let's go to the first side. Rav Kook is very much into feelings and emotions, and he describes them in a very powerful way. And sometimes you have to read what he says a number of times, you have to think about it, and only after you've gone through that whole process, you begin to see that he, yes, there's a great deal of truth to what he's saying. Number one. Kol chet madiv et halev. Every sin makes the heart unhappy. Madiv may be even a little bit more than unhappy, I would say sad. Every sin saddens the heart. Mipnei shehu soter et ha'ardut shebein ha'ishyut ha'pratit im kol ha'avaya kula. Difficult sentence, but not so difficult. because hate sin is a contradiction. It shatters the unity that should exist between the personality of a person with all of existence. Let me try to explain this, maybe through the words of the Rav of Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik says that in redemption, there are two kinds of redemption. There's the redemption of the Jewish people, the return of Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, the building of the Beit HaMikdash. There is a national geula, national redemption. What is national redemption? The ingathering of all Jews back here to Eretz Yisrael. He says that there's also a geula pratit. There is the redemption of the individual. Rav says that the sinner is a person who has lost his moorings. He's not anchored any place, because there's something about sin which breaks and shatters the relationship, not only with all of existence. The Rav goes one step further than Rav Kook, and he says the inner personality of the man becomes troubled. You feel terrible, you feel bad. And the sinner is one whose thoughts are confused and go in all sorts of directions. There's something about sin that simply affects the inner workings of the personality. And the personality becomes a split one, shattered, splintered. And in the process of tshuva, what happens is that all of the parts of the personality come together all over again, and man's spiritual redemption creates now a wholesome, healthy individual all over again. And he brings from the Mittler Rebbe, one of the Admorim of the house of Lubavitch, who says on the great pasuk that we're going to be saying during the period of Slichus, when we say it, Hashanah Yom Kippur, it's a pasuk toward the end of Torah, B'shov Hashem Elokecho et Shvutcho, God is going to return your captivity, V'shov, and he will turn around again, V'ki Betzcho, and he will gather you in from all of the places where he had dispersed you. And the Mittler Rebbe asked, what do you mean the kibetzcha in singular? He's going to gather you in. It should have said the kibetzchem. God is going to gather you all in together from all portions of the world. So he said, the kibetzcha is talking not only about the redemption of the Jewish people, but the redemption of the human personality. The personality that is going in all directions, all of the pieces are going to fall together again inside the individual, and he will become a whole, healthy person all over again. Rav Kook is nearly saying precisely the same thing, that sin is that which saddens the individual because he is no longer in harmony with all of existence. The Rav and the Mittler Rebbe are talking about the fact that the person is no longer harmonious with himself. He's not happy with himself. And therefore, so Rav Kook goes on to say that since there's a sadness that descends as a result of sin, and he's going to take this idea further as we go through a number of other paragraphs, he's going to say that anger can be the result of sin, depression can be the result of hate. He's obviously not talking about clinical depression where there are clear reasons why somebody is depressed. Sometimes it's quite clear why a person should be depressed. Sometimes we just walk around and we can't figure out for the life of ourselves why are we not happy. Rav Kook says that it's all the result of sin, because that upsets the balance between the human being and his neshama. So he goes on, umitrapehu rak al yedei tshuva. Not Prozac or anything else. The refuah is going to come only through tshuva. Shezoreach olav bo or hashefa ha'eyon, because they will begin to shine upon him. The great upper light shel idealiyot asher lahavayat hamitziyot, the idealism or the ideals of existence, of reality. Upozech ozeret hashvaya klalit v'hahatama lahavaya lahufiya bitocho, and then what he becomes, in a sense, one with the entire cosmos, and therefore what happens is, as this great light begins to shine within the human being, v'shav v'rofalo, it heals him. Onam, indeed, yesod hatzar einenu mi'etzem hachet bilvado, the foundation upon which this pain, the pain comes from, is not from the sin alone, ki im miyisodo shel hachet umitochen mahalach hanefesh shenase hafuch miseder hayishud. Heavy words, but what he's saying is that sin is simply in conflict. It's not the sin itself, but the fact that one has sinned simply conflicts with the purity and the beauty of reality. And therefore, Hazorachat Ba'or HaYosher HaElokei, when the light of the divine light shines b'chol hamatzui, in all that exists in the world, hamurgan v'achdut v'kivun mu'uleh, all that God created is beautifully organized. U'mipnei zeh, therefore, otam asher nafsham ra'o miyisoda v'shoresh hachatoyim kulam munar b'deyoteihem u'b'she'ifatam u'tchunat levavam. See, there are two kinds of sin. This the Rav Soloveitchik also talks about often. There is a sin. Person did something that's wrong. Knows that it's wrong. Sometimes the Eitz HaRa gets the best of us. But then there are those whose sin is the result of the fact that their beliefs and their ideas are all wrong. Most probably, the person doesn't even realize that he's sinning because his whole philosophy of life is completely different. He may believe is a good word for this, believe, ain Elohim, there's no God, as one of our leaders here said recently. He believes, ain Elohim. Therefore, all sin that flows from his mind. So, Rav Kook says in Nezer, Otam asher nafsham ra'am yisodav, those whose souls are evil from the very foundation, v'shoresh hachatayim kulam munar b'deyoteim, and the root of their sin lies in their ideas, in their beliefs, b'she'ifatam, in their desires, u'tchunat l'favam, and the way their heart is made up, hinom ro'e ha'ayin asher ha'olam kulo niro lehem b'tzeva kol tach shakor ad ein taklit. They are the ones whose eyes are bad, they cannot see, and all of creation they see in a black and a dark light. Heim heim hamitramim al ha'olam v'achayim. They're the ones who complain most about the world and about life. Balei atzivu detechol, asher la'agam mikol ha'avaya, uschok haksil, asher lo yada la'avin, ki tov Hashem lakol. Atzivu detechol, there's a Gemara at one place that says the sort of feelings come from the spleen. And that their absolus, their sadness, is ingrained in them, and they laugh and they mock all that exists, and their mockery is the mockery of the fool. Asher lo yada lahavin, doesn't know nor understand, ki tov Hashem akol, God is good to all. So that the person who is out of sync with reality, and reality is all divine, the one who sins, therefore, stands in absolute opposition to all of that. He is out of line with all of existence, and this causes him that inner suffering and pain. Number two, Mahu Makor HaRugza. What is the source of anger? Shel Vishoyim, the evil. Says they seem to be angry people. Meheichon Makor Mashchot Zeh Nimshal. Where does this destructive force, from where does it come? Or Mahu HaKetzef. Ketzef is also a form of anger. Al Ha'olam Kulo, on the whole world. Mahu Yisod Ha'atzvut Hamara. What is the foundation upon which bitter depression, where does it come from? Ho'chelet et haruach et habosa, that consumes the spirit and the flesh of man. Ha'memal'at edes et ha'chayim, that fills life with poison, turns life into poison. Where does this anger come from? Ha'metsuyim etzlam, this anger and this pain and this sense of darkness that is found by the Rishon, where does it come from? Meheichon makor mashchot zeh nimshach. What is the source of this destructive force? Bebitachon pnimi barur onu mishivim al zeh. He doesn't write a sentence of this sort often. What he's saying is, with inner assuredness, clear, onu mishivim al kach, we answer to this question. Our answer is, Mimikor HaRishon Kol Zeh Noveach. It all flows from the source of evil. Evil is a destructive force, and it may be more destructive to the inner personality of the evil person more than it is to all those who may suffer from him. Meirushoyim, the Pasuk says, Meirushoyim Yesei Desha, from those who are evil, out goes evil. Chofshi hu haratzon, man's will is free. V'liyod gibor ben chorin amiti bo achayim. Life is so that man should be strong and he should be free. V'harisha hashnuya ba'omek haneshama, and the evil that lies in the depths of one's neshama, kishaharatzon einenu chofetz lazva, harei soteret at hamishkol hashavesh alachayim. He's really taking the idea of the previous paragraph and he's explaining it. I would say, and we may learn something of this sort in Rav Meir Simcha, God made man good. God made man healthy. And the inner health of the human being is that he should know and understand basic truths. And amongst those basic truths, Rav Meir Simcha is going to say, just as man instinctively knows that 2 + 2 = 4, he also knows that there's a creator and that God created the world. And if he loses sight of this, it's because all of the events or the society that surrounds him, but the inner core of man who is created by God is a healthy one. When one is evil, what he's doing is he's fighting. He's fighting and he's destroying the inner core of his real health. And that, of course, is an extremely disturbing experience. Harehi soteret et hamishkol hashavesh alachayim. Evil is that which destroys the balance of life. Man's soul has a sense of yosha, what's right and what's wrong, with all that exists in the world. In kol ha'havaya kula, with all of existence, b'kloluteho u'b'protiyoteho, as a whole and each individual part. Vehidus harmonia, the destructive, destroying this harmony, machovim rabim hu misabev, that brings about many sources of pain. We need to feel a sense of the flow of our lives, that we are not in conflict with others. Conflict with others can be extremely painful. What he's saying most probably is conflict with a man's inner self is most probably more painful than all. And when it goes, this rishach goes into the spirit of man, atzumim yisurav, the pain is great. Shehimid galim b'tzurah shel zva'ah, that pain reveals itself as some kind of a zva'ah, something terrible. Shel kitzafon, great anger. Shel chutzpah, shel kalon, to cause shame. V'yiyush, and ultimately it brings man to a sense of despair. V'lozot, therefore, korim him ha-tzadikim, anshe ha-tov v'ha-chesed. The tzadikim, who are the people of good and kindness, anshe ha-osher shalachayim, those who are the happiness of life, el harashoyim ha-mlolim, the righteous call to the unfortunate evil, bo'u v'chiyu, come and live. You want to start living? You have to return the sense shalvat hashkev of peace and tranquility. Shel bitachon, shel kavod. I don't know what he means by the word bitachon. We seem to use the word bitachon in a different sense today, and maybe that's what it should mean: a sense of security and honor. Like dew that comes from God, and like the rain that comes down upon the grass. There is something of great life when one's inner harmony returns. Most probably, we've experienced, we don't feel good, but we're sick. And then the inner harmony of the physical body returns. We feel that much, we feel better, we feel great. We can smile, we can sing, we can dance. There is the conflict that goes on within the human being, within his psyche, because of the clash of his natural goodness with his evil, is something that destroys the inner harmony. And the destruction of that harmony is that which causes anger that expresses itself in chutzpah, and it expresses itself in a sense of shame, and ultimately brings men to despair. Let's go to number three. He was a wise man, Rav Kook. He tells us how a person should do tshuva. How you do tshuva? Tshuva rotzeh, when a person wants, shekol chushav, all of his feelings, the karmic strengths, hapnimim, his inner strengths, should become holy at one time. The person decides he's going to do tshuva, and he just wants to sanctify and purify and cleanse himself all in one shot. Well, when I was growing up, they used to call this somebody who wants to catch maluchim, catch angels. Like all of a sudden, we become very impatient of ourselves, and we decide we are going to reach the great heights. So when a man wants that all of his senses and all of his strengths, his inner strength, should become sanctified at one moment, with the otaha aliyah ruchanit shebahakarato kishehi mitaleh. In other words, in his mind, he was talking about again about the great idea that's in the mind, according to the levels that his mind wants to reach. All of the blemishes in his deeds, everything should get straightened out, miyad, immediately. And they should be corrected, b'tikun muchlat, absolute. That's it, it's going to be perfect, but not on a further. His soul will never find a place to stand. He's going to fall. He will not be able to strengthen his will.
Lit's ode to march, Al Dera Hashleimut Tamitit. He will not be able to march along the road of true fulfillment. He'll never do it. Elohi Ikar Shahakovo. There's a fundamental principle that embraces everything. Because it's a process. And he describes the process. Aliyat Hahakara. A rise in the recognition and the understanding where I want to go. Take it easy. Recognizing where it is that I want to go. Hagbarat or HaTorah, strengthening the light of Torah. And immediately after that, V'hatshuva ha-ma'asit hiyetz mukhala. Tshuva indeed should be close by. And Batila at first, B'dvarim shalahava. And we're going to see another piece soon where he says, don't dwell on the past. Everybody should be facing the future. B'dvarim shalahava, things in the future. V'ahakach, B'dvarim shalahava, and then to correct things that happened in the past. And which ones? Hanoach lehitakeh. When you're finally ready to deal with the past, deal with the past with those things that are easily corrected. V'achar kach, and afterward, yitrachei kachod, he's trying to broaden the area, gam v'dvarim shetikunam kavei, also to correct things that it's more difficult to correct. V'kol yelech, so he shall go, haloch v'aloch, going and rising. Until he will be worthy to correct everything. It's not going to be done in one single instant in time. There is another place where the Rav says that anybody who attempts to do that, there's going to be a period, in a sense, where his intellect and his neshama, in a sense, intellectually separates from his body. And in fact, the neshama working on his body, the neshama is working on tshuva, but the body hasn't caught up. And during that period of time, all sorts of terrible things can happen, that when the neshama ultimately gets back to the body, it's going to find a body that is more steeped in sin than before. The whole personality, the whole organism, has to go step by step. First, in the mind, the recognition. The means will be strengthening the light of Torah. You've got to study Torah. Without studying Torah, there can't be real spiritual growth of any sort. And there's everybody has some form of study of Torah that's possible for them. And when you go past the study of Torah, then you begin to take things you've done wrong and begin to correct them. But first, for the future. Only afterwards begin to deal with the past. And when you begin to deal with the past, first those things that are easy to correct, and then after that, those that are difficult. And so man, that's the process of tshuva. He says the same thing in number four. Yesod ha-tshuva tzadik la'olam liyot munach al ha-tikun shel mahavah. The very foundation of tshuva always has to be placed on correcting the future. Ubatchilo lo yosim kol kach l'ita ma'akev al dvar hava. And at the beginning, you should not pay any attention and should not be stopped because of that which happened in the past. Ki im yavo miyad laso betiten ha'ava, because if he will come immediately and become involved in correcting the past, yim tsam in yot rabot, he's going to find many things standing in his way. If one is going to deal with the past, he's going to find all sorts of things that will be obstacles and are going to make the tshuva difficult. But when he is really involved in correcting his deeds for the future, then he has a guarantee that he will be able to correct the past. Because by virtue of the fact that he's correcting the present and the future, he's going to receive the help of heaven. Gam kein al takanat avam. Then there will be the help of heaven that is going to stand by him and assist him in correcting the past. By the way, psychologically, it's most probably true as well. We need to increase the psychologists. But most probably one of the things that eats us up more than anything else is we dwell on things that happened in the past. And very often we dwell on things that happened in the past that we did or that we didn't do, that we said or that we didn't say, and it eats us, it consumes us from within. This Esther's Arif Alei B'dika. And it's very difficult. You have to go ahead with life has to go on. But then he says that once one corrects the future, the Rebbeinu already is going to give one the aid and the assistance that's necessary in order to be able to correct the past. Because there are some things in the past that are very, very difficult. Very difficult to correct. There's even one place where the Meir Simcha, Moshe Kaufman, says that, you know, you hurt somebody in the past. You didn't know where they are. You'll never find them. You can't say you're sorry. What are you going to do? You need yourself up. So he says, if you correct the future, then the Rebbeinu is going to make sure that that person is going to feel for themselves, I forgive them. I forgive them. So that the tikkun ha'avar, the correcting the past, is something that happens as a result of one's correcting the future. The next is a very frightening, number 5, shook me up. And there are a number of other places where he expresses the same idea, and it just shook me. E echar la adam sheyia mitzta'er be'emel b'tzavat ha'tzibur ki in kishiyekadesh edrachav v'yitakein midotav v'yashur v'tshuva shleimah. Very frightening. Says one can never truly feel the pain of the community unless one has corrected his ways and has done complete tshuva. We may be able to say, never, terrible thing that happened. But the neshama doesn't really feel the pain of the community unless the neshama is pure and clean. A pure neshama is one that is truly sensitive to the pain of the community. Very, very shaking, thing. Because it leaves open all sorts of possibilities. I don't know. If people in leadership are not what they should be, can they really feel the pain of tzibur? Don't we want to feel at least that much that we can sense the suffering of a fellow Jew? And he's saying you can't really until you get to it. It's a very frightening thought. You can't really feel somebody else's pain unless the neshama is pure. Ha'ishtadlut b'tzarat ha'tzibur ba'omek ha'lev. To be a partner in the suffering and the pain of the community at the depths of one heart. He atzma, that in and of itself, he gam kein schar mitzvah. Oh, what a beautiful thing he's saying. It's a privilege to be able to feel the pain of Klal Yisrael. And that privilege is something that's granted to a person when he earns it. If you don't earn it, you can't really feel it. He atzma, he gam kein schar mitzvah, the reward for mitzvah. Shezok mazeh dag zakei hanefesh. The only ones who really are zocha to this are zakei hanefesh. People whose souls are pure. Tmimei derech, people the road is a road of tmimut ha'okim b'torah Hashem, who go in the Torah of God. Tell you, I just remind myself now. In 1994, I was part of a delegation of Rabbonim that from here that went to the United States in order to meet with Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshivas, Admorim, and tell them about what's happening over here. September 1993 was Oslo. This was end of January, beginning of February. Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich was in the group, Rabbi Eliezer Waldman, Rav Chaim Trutman, Rav Shaltai Zelikovich, and when we came to the United States, we divided into pairs, and each one of us had a list of Rosh Yeshiva and Habonim and Admorim that we visited day and night, day and night. There were times that we had meetings set up for us at 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning. There's only one person that we all went to as a group, and that was to Rav Avraham HaKohen Tam, the Hatzadik of the Hashiva of Torah Das, that passed away 2-3 weeks ago. I had been a student of his in high school with my Rebbe. Not only I learned by him, I had two older brothers. My oldest brother passed away already, Yosef, the Chorin of Rebbe. He learned by Rav Avraham, my daughter Shmuel, who lives in Petach Tikva, and every time I'd meet Rav Avraham, he'd always ask me, was macht Yosef, was macht Shmuel, 30, 40 years later, he still remembered all the names. We all went to Rav Palm of the group. I remember it was one of the coldest days of winter in New York. I mean, the breath was freezing. And after we were finished and we were all on our way out, so he says, Shalom, wait a minute. Okay, so I wait, everybody goes out. And he says, tell me what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. And I told him, from my point of view, which wasn't only my point of view, it was ours, and unfortunately, everything I said to him was proven true, every last word. I saw before myself a little man. Torrents of tears coming down the man's face. He just stood there and cried like a little baby. I have never in my whole life seen a person so moved by the Tsar of Klal Yisrael. I never saw it. It was a one-in-a-lifetime experience. When I came to this piece in Rav Kook, as I said it now, I understood exactly what Rav Kook was saying. First of all, you know why he was able to say it? You know why Rav Kook was able to say it? Because he was that too. He knew it because he was purity itself, and he felt deeply the pain of Klal Yisrael. Rav Kook was the tzaddik. The tzaddik hador, there's no question about it. In addition to being an awesome Tom Tolkien, he was the tzaddik hador. I mean, 70 years, this being targeted out for 70 years, when I'm studying Torah non-stop for 70 years, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. He was an absolutely unusual individual. And I saw precisely what Rav Kook writes here. I saw that before my very eyes. I've never seen it. Never seen it before, nor have I seen it since. And this is what he's saying. To be truly mishtapek and feel the tsar of Klal Yisrael. I imagine that everybody can feel it. Everybody can feel it, but everybody feels it. Rav Kook is saying, according to one's spiritual level. The greater one's spiritual level. Doesn't mean we don't feel. Oh, no, I don't. Don't get me wrong. Doesn't mean we don't feel. But the level of our ability to feel is directly related to the level of our own purity and sanctity. That's what he said. I'm sure we all feel the pain of Klal Yisrael. There isn't a person here in this room that doesn't feel it. But there's feeling and there's feeling. There may be times that we get choked up. There may be times that we feel the sense of terror that others may be feeling. There's no question about it. We feel it. We're good Jews. We're living here. And as Rav Kook said earlier, anybody who is connected to Tzion is going to be part of that great spiritual awakening we all feel. But there's feeling and there's feeling. In Rav Palm, I saw the ultimate of what Rav Kook says here. And there's no question about it. I can imagine Rav Kook hearing the pain of a fellow Jew could burst out into tears as well. All right. One-liner. Ikar ha-nefilot ba'ot mibdei she'eno ma'amin bekaluta shel tshuva. I think that this is a line that, in addition to the fact that we translate it, I think it's a line that we have to repeat to ourselves time and time again until it becomes part of our consciousness. The main reason that man falls in a spiritual level because he doesn't believe how easy tshuva really is. If we would know how easy it really is, then there would not be, well, I would say, in a sense, that we're frightened of the unknown. Frightened of the unknown. Like who knows? Who knows what's waiting for us out there? Iker ha-nefilot ba'ot b'nei she'eino ma'amin b'kaluta shel tshuva. Never mind. My father-in-law had a Talmud Torah, and parents very often were afraid, you know, sending their children to Talmud Torah, afraid to make a rabbi out of them. Go to Sunday school, God forbid that I'm learning a rabbi. Okay. Right? First of all, it's not so fair being a rabbi. That's up there. But like, who knows what's waiting on the other end of Sunday school? Well, who knows what's happening? He says, Iker ha-mefilot man's, the main reason why man's fall is because he doesn't believe how easy tshuva is. Now let's go a little further. We're doing well today. You should know that this, to me, this is an experience. A lot of you know, but this is a major experience. Just to spend an hour and a quarter delving into the words of Rav Kook. And what I've done is, you know, I'll say Hamas leg of just a little bit. This is a taste, but there's a tremendous amount of power in his word. Here he goes back to feelings. When one asks, where does depression come from? And as I said earlier, we're not talking about clinical depression. Sometimes people are depressed, and they have very good reason to be depressed. But we're talking about a depression that doesn't seem to have any clear reason. Like everything's fine, everything's okay. So the Chilulei Torah, we have to answer, Mehashefa shel hamasim hamidos v'adeos haros, from the flow of the influence of deeds and personality traits and ideas that are bad al hanishama shei to'emet b'chusha ha-choged et medinutam. The neshama simply can't take it. The neshama feels the bitterness of evil. V'hi nisledet nifchedet v'atzuva. What beautiful words. Nisledet means she is taken aback. The neshama simply is taken aback, becomes frightened, and the neshama becomes sad. Because the neshama cannot tolerate evil. Maybe we shouldn't even use the word evil. Evil is too strong the word. It character traits that need to be corrected. We can all use a little, little sprucing up of the our character and our beliefs and our ideas. The neshama can't take it, so the neshama is recoils, misled it. It's a beautiful word. The fact is that I first came across this word about 40 years ago in Rav Kook in this. I'll tell you that story. I was a
I was a student, I learned in Eretz Yisrael. After the Torah, I learned the Torah Das. Because I did learn by Rambam. And then I went to, after high school, a year or two after high school, I went to Baltimore. And I was a little, I was a little different. You know, I think there may have been this Zionist rebellion in me even then. So I learned in Eretz Yisrael, I came back from Eretz Yisrael. One of the things that I picked up in Eretz Yisrael was the Orot HaTshuvah of Rav Kook, the Sefer. The Sefer had been out of print for many years, and Bnei Akiva reprinted it, and like sort of a pocket edition. I remember it so clearly. It was a bright red color, fire engine red. Now the Rosh Yeshiva of Rudamon Sefer Tzadik Levracha an attack into the dormitory to catch anybody who's in the dormitory and they shouldn't be there and should be the race matters. It caught me one day. Of course, I was deeply engrossed in learning in my room. There's no question about that. But he always used to like it to see what svarim I have. And then his eye hits this fire engine red little sefer. He takes it out and he sees it. So it tells me, Shalom, ich nehme das, I'm taking it. And you come to my house tonight, and I'll tell you why. Okay, there it was. I thought that my closet Zionism had been found out. I mean, Yeshiva with a Bnei Akiva, safer published by Bnei Akiva. So I went to his house that night. So he told me the following story. During the 30s, he had started the yeshiva in 32 or 33 in Baltimore. And then, like all yeshivas, majors, you know, they struggle until they're on their feet. Once or twice a year, a man by the name of Mr. Mendelowitz used to visit Baltimore. Mr. Mendelowitz really was the architect of Torah in the United States of America. He built the Torah Das, and he assisted many other yeshivas. And really, you know, when you say Mr. Mendelowitz, you think it's a mister. He was a grown olam. He insisted on being called Mr. Mendelowitz, but he was. All of Torah was an open book to him. He was a Hungarian Jew that knew Lithuanian and German Torah. He knew then in German, and he learned German in order to know the one of these translations. He knew everything. Siddus, Kabbalah, Shaus. When he would come to visit Baltimore, he would always go to visit the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva told me that he would always leave a donation to the yeshiva. He came to raise money for Torah V'Das, but he always left a donation. $500, now $500 in the 30s was a lot of money. And I think he says that in one of the conversations, sort of he saw that Mr. Mendelowitz had this little sefer. He asked him about the sefer. So Mr. Mendelowitz told him, whenever he goes out on a journey, he always takes this sefer with him. He never travels without this sefer. The sefer was Orot HaTshuvah of Rav Kook. And the Rosh Yeshiva never had a copy of the Orot HaTshuvah until he took my violin to read. And I have forgiven him. He kept it. I was mindful of a long time ago. It was worth his taking it just that I should know this story. It was enough. In other words, because here there's a certain segment of our community that to look into a book is like, hey, puzzle, hey. The man was a giant. I mean, one would have to delve many years into the words of Rav Kook to see what a giant he truly was. Just like not everybody appreciated Rav Soloveitchik, but I came back now from Chutzos with some more slogans that have come out with Shurma from Salvation. Awesome. Awesome. Anyway, I hope we got a little bit out of this experience. In Yitz Hashem, next week, we're going to take a number of selections from the Bnei Simcha. They will be easier to understand, I believe, and just as powerful.